Hey gang, a couple of nights ago I was invited on Farron Shoaf's show on RBN. It was his first show since the election, and so we covered all the topics of the election and the formation of the new Trump administration, what it portends for the future. I think it was a really interesting show. I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome to the Alternative Media. This is your Saturday broadcast where we discuss current events, politics, the disinformation, lies, deceit, and propaganda, the mainstream corporate-owned puppet media, and the fact that the federal government of the United States no longer has any resemblance whatsoever of representation of we the people. Hopefully, that may change soon. We shall find out. It is Saturday, November 19th, 2016. We're in hour one of the broadcast. Dr. Patrick Slattery is going to be joining me this hour. Do we have Dr. Slattery with us?
Yes, I'm with you. Thank you for having me on again.
Oh, I'm glad to have you joining me, Dr. Slattery. It's been 3 weeks since I've had you on this broadcast. The election has taken place. I just wanted to, this is the first broadcast since the election, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to share your views on this. Dr. Slattery, I was watching in NBC the night of the election. That is the one of the few channels that I get, and the coverage was so completely biased. They have Chuck Todd. I refer to him as Cuck Todd. But he was actually going through the counties of Florida, giving his description of how it was practically impossible that Donald Trump could carry Florida. And, of course, some of the other states, too. Even North Carolina. He was still hanging on that North Carolina was going to go to Hillary. And what made it interesting, now, I was also listening to you. You were streaming live with Andrew England on the Daily Stormer. It was really interesting.
Yeah, and I think I was calling the states pretty accurately, don't you?
Yes, you were calling the states pretty accurately. And I switched it over to Fox News on my phone to listen to their stream. And they had already called several of the states that NBC was still holding out on. And it was just amazing to see how the mainstream media, all the way to the bitter end, held on to that hoax that they had perpetrated on the American people for all of these months. So I just wanted to give you an opportunity, take as long as you want to, give your assessment of how the election played out and your views on it. Because you guys, and some of the names I didn't recognize that was on the Daily Stormer, I know some of the different podcasts, I believe, was joining you and Andrew. But it was really interesting, and I thought that was a great thing that y'all done covering the election like that as well.
Well, it was a lot of fun. I mean, that was, I can't tell you how much fun I had. And it was such a great day for me, with the exception of my children's births and my wedding and, personal things like that, it had to be one of the greatest days of my life. It was a great day. It was a great day. I never supported a candidate who won before, so it was a big deal for me. As far as the hoaxes that were being perpetrated by, you said, NBC and CNN is what I was keeping an eye on that night. I was using their website to get the raw data. And I'm sure most of the other networks besides Fox, I think the reason that they were perpetrating this hoax that Hillary would still win, I think they were, when the states in the Eastern time zone, like Florida, North Carolina, were potentially going one way or another, voters were still voting on the West Coast and in the Rocky Mountain states. And if you think back to 1980, it had become clear from exit polling, even before votes were counted, that President Carter was going to lose and lose in a landslide to President Reagan. And he gave his concession speech while the polls on the West Coast were still open and came under a lot of criticism for that because there were races down ballot, Senate, governor, House of Representatives, local House races. And so I think what CNN and NBC and the others were trying to do was keep the Democrats' spirits up so that they would come out and still vote on the West Coast and do better in these down-ballot elections. I think that's why, because obviously just maintaining this hoax that Hillary is going to win, maintaining it for an extra couple hours as far as the presidency goes, that's completely futile. But I do think they were trying to keep the races down-ballot from being adversely affected by disaffected Democrats who would not come out and vote if they thought that Hillary was already lost. So I think that's what it was all about. But yeah, I had a great time in that show. I recognize a lot of the voices, you know, of my co-panelists were familiar to me, but I didn't necessarily know all their names. I think, you know, there's, and they go by funny names. I think there's a guy named Bulbasaur, which is a Pokemon name, and they have all these strange names they go by, but it was a lot of fun.
Is that the future of, I hate to say Patriot Radio, I don't know what the term of what we do here anymore is, but is that the future? I've wondered that myself because, well, actually, let me ask you this question. The Huffington Post has called for censorship of websites like the Daily Stormer. The new buzzword is fake news, and that's one, something I wanted to ask you about. And also Twitter this week purged a lot of alt-right users, and is this what we're going to see here in the foreseeable future as the way to eliminate those of us like yourself and I that have been out here on the forefront saying, you know, we've been saying for months now that the white vote is going to come out in mass for Donald Trump, and of course the mainstream media just acknowledging that because they had to after the election.
Yeah, well, as for their platform being the future, it's hard to say. It's certainly a big part of the present. Now, your show is more of a traditional radio format. It's live. People can call in and speak live. The Daily Show or Fast the Nation are recorded, and so you can't have people participate. It's not, you know, talk radio, so to speak. So they're different formats. Now, their podcasts aren't interrupted by commercial breaks, so that's something that some of their listeners prefer. So they're different, and of course, then format-wise, those shows tend to, well, they don't have to be, but they do tend to be long, and I think the Fast the Nation is two and a half hours long. It can be longer than that. I think the same with the Daily Show, and it's almost as if you're listening to some people, interesting people, but just sitting around on the weekend and having a fun conversation and a lot of joking. And so it's somewhat different, whereas your show is more of a newscast and opinion and caller, you know, call in radio. So they're different formats. I wouldn't say that that's the future, but it is a format that is popular among young people. And the young people, at least in our movement, have played a really decisive and important role. I'm not saying they could have done it by themselves, but perhaps we couldn't have done it without them.
It has gained ground. It's astonished me, really, how much ground they've gained. And the aspect of humor, and we talked about it a little bit a couple of weeks ago, and more power to them, more power to them. What is your thought about now the mainstream media has had to come out and say, of course, they're saying it was the uneducated white vote, I think is the way they keep wanting to frame it. But they have had to admit the fact that the white people in this country have had enough and are fed up with liberalism just crammed down their throat, open borders, high taxes, endless wars. And the biggest statement I've ever seen, and this was the first time that I ever had a candidate that I was really, truly wanting to see win 100%, 100% behind and win also. I mean, I've had to hold my nose and vote several, and several times I didn't vote. I just didn't take part in the farce. But now, I mean, this has been a real window of insight. Seeing Trump go all the way across the nation time and time again, and the thousands and thousands of people come out and, It's very interesting to see the reaction. You know how when the mainstream media harped for, it seemed like forever, but I know it was well over a week, about David Duke saying vote for Donald Trump, or he supported Donald Trump, and disavow, you got to disavow. Where was the disavow for Hillary Clinton or for Barack Obama for all these rioters and vandals and really criminals, haters? How about the hypocrisy of the media never connecting all of these rioters with Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton? And, of course, they never told them to stop or anything.
No, they didn't. They didn't. And because why should they tell them to stop? Every time there's rioting, it gets blamed on us anyway. So you can have people burst into a Donald Trump rally and create disruptions and start fights. And then they say, oh, look how violent the Donald Trump rallies are, as if it was Donald Trump's people who started it. And if people are rioting in Charlotte or Milwaukee or whatever, you know, the blacks are rioting, or in Charlotte, I think there was a lot of George Soros-funded whites who got shipped in to riot, too. It gets blamed on white cops, even though, like, in Charlotte, it was a black cop that shot the black guy, but it's still blamed on white people. So it's a win-win for them when there's violence. Our people get attacked, and our people get blamed for it. So it's a win-win for them. That's why they weren't denouncing it. And then, of course, you have Hillary. She brought to her convention the parents, mostly single mothers, of these various Black Lives Matter martyrs, like Michael Brown. You know, who, just about every case, they were criminal and very much responsible for the events that led to their own demise. Yet she parades their single mothers before our national spotlight. And then in the run-up to the last week of her campaign, what does she do? She gets all these rappers like Beyoncé, or I don't know if that's rapping or groaning what she does, but Beyoncé and Jay-Z and all these other people. You know, it's as if she thought that blacks were going to give her the election, that they were a majority already. Well, we're still a majority. So, and did she have to come out and disavow, for instance, Beyoncé's really repugnant lyrics that she has, or Jay-Z? I mean, they're in front of her singing these horrible things, and that turns off people. So she very much got her desserts. She's not going to be the president. And this business about her winning the popular vote, well, first of all, you don't necessarily have to believe the popular vote there, because there was a certain amount of rigging that was going on, I have no doubt. But the thing is, both Trump and Hillary knew the rules going into the game. The rules were the electoral votes. And if you're trying to get the electoral votes, you're not going to campaign in California or Texas or New York, where most of the people are, where most of the voters are. You're going to campaign in Iowa and North Carolina and New Hampshire. And that's what they did. And that's where they campaigned. And the voters in those states, they voted for Trump. Where they were campaigning, they voted for Trump. Now, had the rules been it was going to be a popular vote, then they would have campaigned in New York and Texas and California, and I bet Donald Trump would have won that election too if that's how it had, the game had been played. But you can't change the rules afterwards.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a great point that they never, you know, if you're watching CNN or NBC or any of these cut out news networks, they talk about the popular vote, but they never delve into the fact that if that was the way the game was played, they would do it, you know, you would campaign differently. And that's exactly the truth. And it brings up something else. You had wrote an article about this. You talked about it 3 weeks ago when I had you on this broadcast. And now change.org has a petition. It's been signed by more than 4.3 million people. And it's encouraging members of the Electoral College to cast their votes for Hillary Clinton because she won the popular vote. And when the college meets on December 19th, and it argues that Donald Trump is unfit to serve and that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. And this was something that you were the only one. If anyone else made mention or wrote any articles about it, I didn't see them. I think you were out front on this one. I don't think it's likely to happen because given his margin of a win. But what's your thoughts on that? Because this is actually happening. You predicted this long before the election.
Right. So I don't think it's going to happen because it would require 37 electors to desert Trump. At least 37 would have to desert him. And I think there are some Republican electors who don't like Trump, but to get 37 is tough. But here's the thing. If you took about 70,000 votes in Pennsylvania and about maybe 15,000 in Michigan, all of a sudden, all you would need would be one person, one single elector to shift their vote. Right? Because that would be 36 out of the 37 between Michigan and Pennsylvania. To get one person to shift their vote, and you'd have a constitutional crisis. So that's how close we came to the that Move On Org petition being something that could provoke a constitutional crisis. Now, Barbara Boxer is introducing, or I guess trying to introduce into Congress, what would have to be an amendment to the Constitution to eliminate the Electoral College. You know, don't think just because Donald Trump won the Electoral College this time while losing the popular vote that the Electoral College is on our side. It's not. It's not. The Electoral College, the big problem with the Electoral College, one of them is that people don't have to vote the way they're expected to vote. In only a couple of states have laws that have enforcement, where somebody voting the wrong way would that vote would be nullified and somebody would replace them. In other places, they might have laws against the these disloyal votes, the what they call the faithless votes, but the laws have no real enforcement. Maybe the person could pay a fine. Well, you know, George Soros would be happy to reimburse that person for you know, his fine many times over. So that's nothing. So I think either eliminating the Electoral College and having a straight popular vote, or having some sort of constitutional amendment that eliminates the possibility of the faithless elector, the person voting the wrong way, there should be some sort of.
We're coming up on a break. Hold that thought. We'll talk about it on the other side. You're listening to The Alternative Media with Farron, joined by Dr. Patrick Slattery. We're back on The Alternative Media. Farron in the studio, joined by Dr. Patrick Slattery. You know, we were discussing just a little bit earlier the fact that now the new buzzword is fake news. And I was watching one report. They were saying actually fake news maybe made Hillary Clinton lose the election. But, you know, they don't consider the New York Times coming out 3 weeks before the election or 2 weeks, whatever it was, and saying that the election is over, that Hillary has won the election weeks before the vote. You know, that's fake news, in my opinion. But no mention of that whatsoever. The fake news apparently is coming from alternative media sources. And this is something that Facebook, Google, Twitter needs to address. So, to take you back just a little bit to that question, how since the media, now Donald Trump is president-elect, and they can't really do a lot about that, perhaps, what do you think about the media's turning its attention to those of us that pushed hard to try to eliminate websites or eliminate this type of information getting out?
Well, hopefully it's too late now. I do think that the alt-right and these alternative media, your show and Dr. Duke's show, The Daily Stormer, these podcasts we were mentioning, in addition to somewhat more, you know, semi-mainstream, semi-accepted sites like Breitbart or InfoWars, I think they had an enormous impact on this race. And when you consider how close it was, like I said, you can switch about 100, 105,000 votes in those two states, and then maybe Wisconsin as well, add a few from Wisconsin, and Hillary's won the election. You're talking about it was really a razor-thin win. And some people might say, oh, well, the alt-right probably did more harm than good. I don't believe that. I think it was really crucial. So hopefully it's too late. Hopefully with a President Trump, and, you know, I have a little bit of concerns about, you know, some of his current or potential appointments. But I think in general, it's pretty likely that he's going to appoint some decent people. And the odds of him allowing for a shutdown of us through legal means is greatly reduced. But of course, Facebook or Twitter, these are private companies. And if Twitter decides it's going to abolish these people's accounts, it will have to pay in the marketplace. It'll have to pay in terms of its relevance. But I don't think there's anything illegal about it. There's something fundamentally wrong, because they get into a position where, I guess there is a legal concept of the natural monopoly. You know, they establish themselves as natural monopolies. But I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if there's any legal recourse that people would have. Twitter, to a large extent, became relevant because it's a place where various people can shout at each other and have these Twitter battles online. And if it's going to put out all the various fires, it's not going to be fun for people anymore. So I don't know. I don't do Twitter personally. But I see the relevance of alternative media growing rather than being diminished. And if Hillary had won, I'd be a lot more worried, but I think with Trump having won, it's a lot less likely that you are going to reduce our relevance, because I think it would really take a combination of private companies and government regulatory agencies. And at this point, with Trump in, you're probably not going to have the government joining in on the fight to silence the very people that put him in office in the first place.
I agree. I agree. And that is one of the many silver linings in Donald Trump winning this election. I had to get your take on this, but I've never seen anything like this in my life, and maybe never will again. I don't know. The University of Michigan offered its traumatized students coloring books and Play-Doh to calm them down. The University of Kansas reminded its stressed out students that they had therapy dogs available to them. Cornell University held a campus-wide cry-in. Tufts University offered devastated students arts and crafts sessions, kind of like, I guess, like kindergarten. And then many, many, many colleges, they canceled classes or exams because the students or the instructors were too distraught to teach. What is your thoughts on is our college age students now such immature, babyfied brats that they can't handle losing an election?
It doesn't stop there. I know the school board where I live has announced that they have counselors available and everybody's going through a very difficult time. I'm not going to. I've never had so much fun as I have over the past week.
Hold that thought for me, Doctor. We'll be back after the break. You're listening to The Alternative Media, joined by Dr. Patrick Slattery. Back in moments. We are back on The Alternative Media. Farron in the studio, joined by Dr. Patrick Slattery. Go ahead and elaborate about how much fun you have been having. We were talking about how the college students were in need of so much therapy to deal with their grief over this election. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I've been having a great deal of fun. I have a dog that you heard earlier in the show, and he's a big dog. And when he wants something to eat, some fish or something, I'll have him beg. I used to have him say hi, kind of growls. Now I say Trump, and it's the same growl. But I think these kids at the University of Kansas or wherever, if they have an opportunity for interacting with the, what are they called, the support dogs, therapy dogs, go teach them how to say Trump. I think that would be a good fun thing for them to do. I'm just having a great time, but there's a lot of work moving forward. He's made these appointments. I think a lot of the appointments I like. The one I'm worried about is this Kansas Congressman Pompeo, who is going to be the head of the CIA. You know, he's talked about wanting to execute Edgar Snowden. Was that his first name? Yeah, who's in Russia now. He had leaked things to WikiLeaks. Now, Trump, I went to one of his rallies in the closing weeks of the campaign, and he was quoting from WikiLeaks a lot. I mean, WikiLeaks, you could also say WikiLeaks helped put him over the top. And I'm hoping that Julian Assange will be a free man now. Now, Julian Assange is not formally under house arrest or anything, but he is worried that the British police are going to extradite him to Sweden, which would then extradite him to the United States, where he could face all sorts of criminal charges, which haven't been brought yet, but there was always that potential. So he's holed himself up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. I think he's probably going to be a free man once Trump is in office, which would be a good thing. But you still have this Edgar Snowden, who is, you know, things could be worse. He's a free man, but he's a free man in Russia. And also the Bradley Manning, who is a very troubled person who had leaked things to WikiLeaks several years ago. And he's I guess, in a brig somewhere. Is he in Fort Leavenworth in Kansas?
I think that's right. Yeah, Bradley Manning, he exposed some of the lies about the Iraq war and the killing of some of the, I think it was Reuters media personnel. And our government was just completely lying about the whole story, as usual. And he exposed it. And I forget how many years, he got decades in prison, though. And so yeah, I would love to see Donald Trump do something about the Bradley Manning, Julian Assange, Edward Snowden situation. That would have never been a topic of conversation under a Hillary Clinton administration.
Oh, absolutely not. And the other thing that worries me about this Congressman Pompeo is on the PBS NewsHour yesterday, they had a couple of segments where they were talking about the new appointments. In one segment, they had a Jewish congressman, Adam Schiff from California, who's a Democrat, but he was pretty enthusiastic about Pompeo. He didn't like Flynn being the new national security advisor. He doesn't like Senator Sessions being the attorney general, or Steve Bannon being the White House chief strategist. Those he found very alarming, but he liked the appointment of Pompeo. And then in the next segment, there was a Washington Post columnist named Ruth Marcus, who's also Jewish, and she assessed people the same way. She didn't like any of them except Pompeo. So the fact that you have these Jewish politicians and journalists and neocons who are fine with the Pompeo appointment, that is a little bit of cause for concern. But otherwise, they're very alarmed at these other appointments. And General Flynn, just as recently as the summer, had, I guess it was a retweet, but he retweeted something after the Democrats, and when I say the Democrats, I really mean like the Jewish leaders of the Democrats, had been trying to pin all sorts of things on Russia, you know, the Hillary's emails on Russia and everything, right? And he retweeted something to the effect that they're trying to blame everything on Russia. It's not the USSR anymore. Not this time, Jews. Not this time. And that to say, not this time, Jews, not this time, or even just to retweet it, it shows that he is, so to speak, red-pilled, that he is aware of this Jewish problem that we have in our society. And that's a big deal. And then Steve Bannon, I don't know if this is true or not, but it's alleged by his ex-wife in their divorce proceedings that he had not wanted their children to go to a certain private school because it would have been full of Jews, and he wanted his children to go to school with Christians. Now, of course, you look at how many Jewish day schools and yeshivas and all these Jewish clubs where the parents want their kids to go to school just with Jews. They don't want their kids to go to school with the goyim, and not just super Orthodox people, but you find lots of people in the mainstream media who are Jews in the mainstream media who send their kids to these types of schools. So there's certainly a double standard. But if Bannon had that much of an awareness of the problems of Jews in the society that he might have said such a thing within his family to his wife, it shows that he's got certain awareness. And I'm very glad that you have people who are aware of a problem. Now, nobody Bannon at Breitbart. I mean, Breitbart's, as much as people like to say it's all right, it's always been pro-Israel. I guess it was Michael Breitbart, the founder. He was raised as a Jew. He was adopted. I don't think he's genetically Jewish, but he had a strong Jewish identity from his adoptive father. And they've always been very pro-Israel. And there's not really any signs that the Trump administration is going to downgrade relations with Israel, which is a shame. But the fact that the Jews were so much against Donald Trump, Israel's not the only thing on their agenda. And the replacement of white people in this country as the majority people of the United States is very high on their agenda. And that's something that Donald Trump seems to be determined to do something about.
And he had appointed David Friedman as an advisor on Israel, and along with Greenblatt, Trump named Friedman as an Israeli advisor. He's a former bankruptcy expert and partner with the Kasowitz law firm. But I mean, that's kind of to be expected. I know that some of the criticism that I've seen. I wanted to ask you this question, though, and we're going to see as it unfolds. And I know everybody's kind of really putting him under the microscope right now, and I am too. We all are. But we've got a little bit of time to see. But I wanted to ask you this question. How dangerous is Trump's position on encouraging or at least openly supporting moving the capital of Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem?
It could happen, and I wouldn't put it past him. The thing is, it's very symbolic. It's a gesture. And Trump is a deal maker. And I think he would be more than willing to do something symbolic to give him some operating room in order to do very substantive things, not necessarily regarding Israel, but regarding the wall, regarding immigration, regarding, you know, supporting the police. The Jewish oligarchs in our country are trying to undermine the police and have created this narrative that blacks are eternal victims, which in turn has incited the blacks to ever greater violence. And of course, Donald Trump's also very likely to take on the Federal Reserve in one way or another. He's going to go after a lot of aspects of Jewish power. And so Trump is a deal maker, I think. And of course, making friends with Russia. My gosh, I mean, the Jews had this vendetta going against Putin because Putin took on Jewish power in Russia. I think Trump wants to make some really substantive progress. And if he has to trade off some symbolic gesture, like moving the embassy to Jerusalem, he'll do it because it's no big deal. It really doesn't affect anything on the ground in Israel. It doesn't make the Palestinians' position any less tenable. It's already horrible, and it's not going to do anything regard to that. It's not going to give the Israelis more weapons. I mean, they've already got this weapons contract. Moving the embassy is a gesture. And if he does that, but he's working on all these other things that deteriorate and degrade Jewish power, then I think he's very clever.
You know, we've discussed before just the drastic demographic changes that Merkel has undertook in Germany, and some of the pictures coming out of Paris, what's happening in Great Britain. How much effect do you think Donald Trump may be able to have? Well, there's a nationalism that even Obama has warned of, this new crude form of nationalism that's opposing globalism. And it's exploding through Europe, too. I was reading where in some of, I believe it was in Norway and Sweden, they had some tens of thousands of people marching against the immigration that's taking place in those countries. How much sway do you think this may have to turning the tide that is just destroying Germany and Europe as we know it?
I think an enormous amount. I think, you know, Brexit was a big deal, and Trump's election is Brexit squared. It's huge. Trump has made statements regarding Angela Merkel. He said he used to think that she was a very capable leader, but you know what she's doing now is destroying Germany. That all of these migrants are destroying Germany. They're destroying the other countries, and I think it will go a long way to making it easier for regular European voters to vote for parties that take a very firm line on immigration. I think it will help transform those parties from fringe parties to potentially ruling parties. By example, I think it's going to have a huge. I mean, what do you think?
I certainly hope it does, and I think it will too. I mean, there's been so much news coming out from those countries, people in support. I mean, even Iran and Iraq and some of these other countries. It's almost like a relief. The whole world has had a sigh of relief knowing that not another warmongering administration is moving in, that we all knew what we would get with Hillary Clinton. So I think this is almost like a worldwide sigh of relief, maybe not for a lot of college students and these confused young people that we have. The Democrat
confused
Party
is the word, too.
The Democrat Party has kind of maneuvered itself into the party that represents the blacks and the homosexuals and illegal immigrants. And I mean, I don't know if that's the place they want to be, because if you look back from the time Obama took office to now, the Democrat Party has really, they've just lost and lost and lost governorships. And especially if you get into the state representatives and even down to the mayors, that Barack Obama has not advanced the Democratic Party at all. They have really lost in these elections quite a bit. Now, the Republicans, here's the great question. The Republicans, they're going to have the House and the Senate. They're going to have the executive branch. And they had this under George W. Bush, and they squandered the whole thing. That's one thing they've been really good at. I think it's going to be a different story now, though, under Donald Trump. Because unlike George W. Bush, who now, you know, has exposed himself as just the complete sellout traitor that I knew he was, and probably everybody listening to this show does, but he's exposed himself. It's not going to be George W. Bush, and it's not going to be Jeb Bush. It's going to be Donald Trump, and I think it's going to be a whole different scenario. How dangerous is it from now till January, 20th, 21st? Do you think there's any possibility that the powers that be would try to cause economic or false flag events to really set Donald Trump up for a really rocky start coming in as president?
Yeah. You know, you have Janet Yellen at the Federal Reserve, and I think she might want to keep some of her powder dry. I'm not saying she's necessarily going to do everything at this next meeting they're going to have in December. I think you're going to get a rate hike, and it might be somewhat more than had been expected. I think that one of the tools they'll use will probably be to hike up interest rates and do other things central banks can do, like alter the reserve requirements or other things in order to create some sort of economic hardship, to maybe create some sort of credit crunch, do something, like the stock market has responded initially by going to new heights because of the prospect for decreased, you know, regulations on companies. But there might be some measures to try to create a stock market crash. You know, that's on the economic front. And you, as for false flags, I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but false flags do occur. So, and there's many false flags all over the place. I mean, you could think of Michael Brown as being a mini false flag, as hands up, don't shoot is a mini false flag. It never happened, right? maybe that's maybe false flag's not the right word for it there, but you know, there's all sorts of things that aren't what they seem to be. And of course, all those people going into the Trump rallies, the people apparently hired by the DNC or George Soros, who are paid a certain amount of money to go into the Trump rallies and start trouble. I mean, those are false flags when you get down to it. At least the net result is, because it's gets reported as violence at Trump events. Or here's something else. There's been all of these swastikas that have been painted or magic markered on doors and walls and things. And we don't know who did that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great point, too. We're coming up on the last break. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. We're back on the Alternative Media Farron in the studio, joined by Dr. Patrick Slattery. Doctor, as you well know, this is a short segment. I want to thank you so much for joining me. It's always a pleasure to have you. You're welcome here anytime. And I wanted to ask you this question. It's a difficult question, and I'm not certain that I know the answer, but I wanted to get your opinion on it. You know, we as white nationalists, as the white race, we have conceded so much. We've gave so much ground to the enemy over the years. I mean, we gay marriage, illegals with driver's license, illegals in the school, endless war, affirmative action, which is government-sponsored racism. I mean, it just goes on and on. Now that we have really got some momentum, the white race has stood up and said enough's enough. What do we do now to best advance our cause after this victory?
Well, thank you for having me on, and also thank you for agreeing to come on David Duke's show on Monday. We're looking forward to that. Yeah, in 2 or 3 minutes, it can't really be answered. But if you were to have a list, I think the top priority really has to be starting to talk about Jewish power, because that list of things you gave, from gay marriage to affirmative action, all the illegal immigration, when you look at it, who was behind it? And none of this would have happened without this Jewish power in the United States and around the world. And Jewish power, the essence of Jewish power, is the ability to stifle the discussion of Jewish power. So we have to start talking about it. And these young people on the alt-right, with their crazy memes and their over-the-top rhetoric, are really taking a sledgehammer to the clay feet of this taboo. And we need to follow. You know, they're kind of clearing a very rough and rude path, but we need to follow with somewhat more polite but concrete narrative, without being inflammatory, just being factual, being persuasive. There's a lot of people who have Jewish friends who aren't going to be receptive to overtly inflammatory rhetoric, but will be receptive to statistics, to specific examples, to reason, to logic. And so that's what we have to do. And I'm not criticizing those people on the alt-right with their inflammatory memes, but that is only to get people's attention. You're not really going to persuade a lot of people with that, but you do get their attention and make it possible for the next wave of people like us, who can come with more concrete examples of how and, you know, why they are doing what they're doing, and then a way forward, you know. And the way forward, you know, it's not gassing all the Jews the way they say in their memes, but the way forward is talking about it and making it clear that they can't just continue to badmouth whites and talk about white privilege without facing up to the massive Jewish power and Jewish privilege that we have in this country.
Excellent answer. Well, thank you so much. Always enjoy it. You're always a wealth of information and insight, and I always look forward to having you join me. So I will be talking to you soon, and you have a great evening, sir.
Thank you so much for having me on.